Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
We all have a date with death. And to me, I know that I will keep going and pushing and trying to live my best life, whatever that means, for as long as I'm alive. But not everyone has the same philosophy or the same attitude towards life. And some people, when they see a big adversity or something that goes really wrong, they just contract. They just contract into a lower position, if you will, and they just live on lower key because, you know, look at what happened. We must be more careful. And life, it's going to keep throwing curveballs at you. And you can just, hey, great, I've got that one. I'm still alive. I learned the lesson. I'm stronger than before. Or you can get scared and say, fuck, I hope this doesn't happen again, which this one, by the way, is my mom. She knows that at any given moment, some sort of disaster could come and destroy our lives forever. So therefore, you need to be careful all the time. So it's the approach towards life that makes people make one decision or the other.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Carlos, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it is my pleasure to have you here. So I was introduced to you by way of one of our former guests, Christine McAllister. And When I read the first line of the email that she sent me, I thought, yes, absolutely, I want to talk to this guy. This sounds crazy. There's got to be a really interesting story here. So on that note, I thought I would start by asking you, where in the world did you grow up? And how did that end up impacting the choices that you've made throughout your life and your career?
Yeah, good question. I'm from Spain. I grew up in a little city, and more than the location, what is important is the surrounding of the people that I had around me when I grew up. And it was like it wasn't a big city, so you were exposed to the reality that was there. There wasn't many choices, right? Like small town, kid grows up, other kids. You know, you see what everyone else is doing. So your wall is smaller. That's what I'm trying to say. You see what you see, and that's it. And that was a small city in the north of Spain by the beach, beautiful location. And how it impacted me, I would say that because of the scarcity that I was living in, and my parents were, they never had much money. They always worked really hard for very little money. And to me, that was something that wasn't quite right. And I always wanted, you know, I wanted more for myself. And I always searched for what could I do to make more, right? And then you use the tools and the resources that you have available around you. And, you know, as I was saying at the beginning, if what's around you, it's limited, you just pick whatever is available.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So where did that lead, you know, when you have this sort of, you know, limited sense of possibility? And then why is it that, you know, despite being that environment, you still had sort of the awareness to see that maybe something bigger was possible?
Yeah. So the thing is, what I saw is that I wasn't happy with what I got. I was happy with what I had, but I always wanted more. And I would see my parents working really hard, and I would see like they're living their lives, like always saving, stopping themselves from having a better life, stopping themselves from spending money, always looking for all these things. And I didn't know anybody. I was just a little kid, and this little kid wanted more. And all, every single way that I could find to make more money, to get more money, was apparently wrong. And because of the people that I was surrounded, I could see like my reality was the reality of the kids around me. And these kids, I could see the cool kids that they were kind of, you know, like would start doing some drugs here and there. And I would see myself as a shy, introverted kid that would never, you know, I was just studying and getting my I was studying at school by the time. And at some point, my reality expanded. And that is that to go to high school, I had to go to a different city. And then I realized that was the first time that I realized, okay, so now here I can become someone else because these people don't know who I am. So I don't need to be stuck in my old identity. Why would I choose to be the shy introverted kid where I could hang out with the gangsters and with the bad boys, become one of them, and no one would think I'm an imposter because they don't know who I am? And that was my first realization. I'm like, okay, that's cool. So I became overnight the bully, right? I was being bullied at school, and now I was the bully. I was the bad guy, and I got myself into all this stuff, and not on purpose because I didn't know any better. I realized after years that you can reverse engineer the process, right? And the same way that I got into being surrounded by people doing the wrong things, quote unquote. I'm not judging, but it wasn't the best choice. Later on, many, many, many years later, I realized that, oh, hang on a second. If by surrounding yourself by the bad boys, you end up being one of them, what if you surround yourself by, you know, some other kind of people? And then it wasn't an overnight realization, but something that I learned over the years through a lot of trial and error.
No. Well, so, you know, one of my old mentors often used to say, he said, you know, your temporary circumstances don't have to become your permanent identity. Yet, you know, for so many people, they do. And you seem to have basically taken a circumstance, you know, that was an identity and changed it multiple times. You know, one, what enables that? And two, let's get a bit deeper into this sort of bad boy drug dealing phase, because there's no way I'm going to let you get away with not, you know, going deeper. There's got to be crazy shit that has happened during those periods. But let's start with that question of circumstance and identity, because, you know, often people feel that their circumstances and their identity are intertwined. And, you know, if they don't have the sort of, you know, luxury of an environment change like you did, how does somebody go about changing, you know, that sense of identity that, you know, this is who I am. My circumstances are my identity.
Yeah, look, but back at the time, that's a great question. And back at the time, I didn't realize that you could do that on purpose, right? I was being led by the circumstances. So I was at home. I was the cool, shy, super, you know, well-behaved kid. At school, now I was becoming a bully and a bad guy. For my friends, they would see the whole transformation. So I stopped hanging out with one friend and I started hanging out with different people. And that was just that when I was at high school. But then when I joined university, because I'm an engineer, I'm an industrial engineer, and then I had to adopt a different personality. So I was always juggling between different personalities depending on the environment that I was in, because I wanted to fit. But it wasn't my choice. It was something generated by the the outside circumstances. And to add something more to the mix, when I joined corporate, then but at this time, I was a DJ, I was a drug dealer, I was an engineer, I was the bad boy with my friends, and the good guy at home. So it became really exhausting because I was all constantly juggling between these personalities. Not that I was some sort of psychopath, right? But you kind of people expect something from you. And the way I got into all this stuff is because I was like, all these kids are doing all this stuff. All these kids seem to be the cool kids. They hang out with cool people. They just do like all these things. So, okay, let's see what's all about. And because I didn't know anything else, and that was my reality. I'm like, okay, so that's cool. All these kids are doing that. All these kids are doing fun. They don't seem to be doing anything wrong, apart from the fact that it's illegal. You know, like why wouldn't I make a profit out of it? My friends are doing it. We're all having fun. There's nothing wrong with it. So I'm just gonna take advantage of that. And that started as a game to be the cool kid, right? And it became like a big, like a six-figure business eventually. But I always knew that it was wrong. I always knew that I needed to turn off this part of my life at some point. But, you know, it was convenient at the time. It was generating me some money. I was still like the DJ kind of living the rock star lifestyle, which, by the way, didn't lead me to anywhere good. But it was fun.
Yeah.
And then at some point, and you know, I thought, well, now it's time to join corporate because this is what decent people do. This is what, you know, good people do, right? I need to join corporate, find a girlfriend, buy a house and a car, and then I'll eventually have kids. And I quit everything. I quit DJing, I quit drugs, I quit everything to join corporate. And I'm in corporate. I'm like, holy cow. Like I had been like 5 years in. I had anxiety, couldn't sleep at night, had insomnia, was on drugs to sleep. I was still smoking joints to be able to sleep, caffeine, lots of caffeine during the day to stay awake. Until one day I ended up in hospital, with almost dying out of a heart attack. And I was 29.
Damn.
And then I'm like, okay, maybe corporate is not what I'm supposed to be doing, right? And then is when I started analyzing everything, and I started getting into personal development, and I could see things that I had never seen before, and I could now make sense. You know, Steve Jobs said in one of his most famous speeches that you can only connect the dots looking back. Yeah. And now I understood all the things that led me to the point where I was in life, and I can see how it all makes sense. And I could understand, I could see the parts. I could see the machine that had created this reality and how it happened.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this, you're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Well, so, you know, as somebody who's selling drugs, you mentioned, you know, there was a six-figure business. I mean, this makes me want to kind of do a bit of a dive into looking at, you know, sort of drug policy in different countries around the world, around the world. And also, you know, what are the perceptions that, you know, sort of media creates about drug dealers versus the reality? Because, you know, what do I see? I see narcos, right? And to me, I'm like, oh, you're like a potential future Pablo Escobar in the making. And so I wonder, two things. One, you know, what does media get wrong? And what do we who, you know, don't ever end up in situations like yours misunderstand about, you know, people who do? Two, were you afraid you were ever going to get caught? I mean, how did you manage to, you know, evade the law and you know, get away with this while simultaneously knowing that, you know, the consequences of it could be severe? Now, I don't know, you know, what it's like in Spain, but I know, you know, here in the United States, unfortunately, we have, you know, a huge population in prison that is there for nonviolent drug offenses, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah. Look. This is not a good thing to do in Spain. You go to jail. I would say that I was using a talent to do the wrong thing. And at some point it got really... And look, one of the things, a disclaimer here, I don't want anyone to think that I'm proud of what I did or that it is something that I, you know, share proudly by any mean. It took me many years. Until I was 38. I would be living prisoner of my own reality, prisoner of my own past, because I was so ashamed of all I did, and I could not share that with anyone, and that would create a lot of anxiety. And me living a life that it wasn't being true. And the day that I decided to run my business, I decided to break free from all my past and all my the bad things that I did. I decided to share that. And understand that for you to love who you are today, you cannot hate the experiences that you've gone through in the past. And I just want to say that because I don't want anyone to hear me talking to think, oh, this guy, you know, I've paid my I've paid my toll. I've been about to die many times, and I've had to go through a lot of stuff that we just shouldn't have. But it's also my reality. So it allowed me to understand today that all the things that I've done, good and bad, have taught me like very important lessons that made me the man that I am today. And going back to your question, the thing is that nothing is as good or as bad as we tend to believe. And the things that we don't know, we just don't know them. And I wasn't at the level of Pablo Escobar or Narcos and all this sort of stuff. It all started as a game, and I'm like, well, if everyone does it, why I wouldn't? And then, of course, you see the potential. You can see one thing leads to the other, and what you basically do is you're always hiding from the law, trying not to get caught, trying not to get in too much trouble, making sure that they don't follow you. Like at the at When I quit, because I was paranoid all the time, trying, you know, like thinking that they were chasing me, thinking that they were coming after me. And in some respects it was, because they were after me all the time. But I just quit. I mean, that wasn't going to be my life. It was a means to an end. It was the wrong means to the right end. And at some point I decided to quit. Now, the reality, that was my reality. The reality for the people, like, when they would end up dead. Other people, they would end up in prison. Other people, they would end up so fucked up in their head because of the drugs that they never got out of it. So what I'm trying to say is reality is different for everyone. And you see these stories on TV, you'll see like a lot of people that got away with it, live crazy lives, and some of the people got shot. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, so as somebody who, you know, was an ex-drug dealer, I mean, when you look at drug policy around the world and you see, you know, things like in Portugal where they decriminalize drug use and, you know, paradoxically drug use goes down, what is your perspective on policy when it comes to this? Is it something that we should decriminalize? And if we do, how do you do it in a way that is safe, that doesn't, you know, go off the rails? Because, you know, look, it's funny because you're on a podcast where there are a lot of people who are into personal development, and a common, like a thing in personal development circles is, you know, exploration of their own spirituality through use of drugs, like, you know, mushrooms and ayahuasca, mm-hmm. and, you know, going to Burning Man and shit like this, I've done my fair share of experimentation and it's been beneficial, but I also realized there would be a point of diminishing returns if I continued, particularly when I was younger. I saw kind of, okay, this is going to destroy me if I keep going down this path. And I saw exactly what you were talking about with the paranoia. Like when we were in college, I think this was late, you know, early, you know, 2000s, late 90s, like 99, when ecstasy was like a big craze and raves started becoming very popular in the United States. And one of our friends lived with a roommate who literally just, you know, walked around perpetually with a backpack. And anytime they had a party, he would have to leave the house the minute it looked like a cop might show up. I mean, he lived in the state of paranoia that you're talking about. So all that being said, you know, the average, you know, drug user, some of them are probably people who listen to this podcast. Like the joke was, you do, for me, was like, if you drug tested at a company like Google, half the employees would probably be gone, you know? So, you know, what do you sort of, you know, as somebody who sold drugs, like what is your view on policy and decriminalization and doing this in a way that is safe and, you know, has benefits potentially?
Yeah. That's a great question. So look, I'm gonna talk about data. Like I don't have the exact numbers, but all the countries that made legal or that they criminalized these things, making it more like less illegal sort of thing. Like they've seen a decrease on the criminality or the way that people handle with or deal with drugs. The thing is that if you tell people don't do something, they will do it. When it was. I don't know the words in English for that, but there was a time in the United States they forbidden, they made alcohol prohibited, right? Yeah. I think they call it the dry law. I don't know, that's how you call it in Spanish.
Yeah. Prohibition, yeah.
You cannot prohibit some things, right? What they did, they would start making it illegal. So I think they should find, there must be a balance, and there are substances that they... Unfortunately, I don't think that some drugs should be ever legal because of the level of addiction and the damage that they do to the people that consume them. I would say that drugs like marijuana or some of the soft drugs should be, and I know that some countries, and especially in the United States, I know that in some states they already legal or you, at least not as what happens in Europe. And I think I see that as a positive. I see that positive, like, You want to give more education to people. I've been in festivals where everyone knows that the people are going to do drugs because there's all this, like, I don't like to associate one kind of music to one drug. But when you put all these people into a 24 hours dance music event, you know there's going to be drugs. So you have two different approaches. Yeah. You can put the police there, like, beating the shit out of everyone that has drugs. Or you can put people there that explains people the risks of drug consumption that say, hey, do you have any sort of drug with you? Yes. Okay. So how are you planning to take that today? And give people the information so they can make the right decision. If you think that people are all stupid and they're all going to make stupid things, well, guess what? They will. But if you give them the information and help them out to make the right decision, like, I think it would be a much better solution than just, you know, making things illegal.
So how did this period of your life affect your relationships with, you know, family, with friends, et cetera? I mean, if you're, you know, living in this perpetual state of paranoia, but you happen to be rolling in cash, you know, and your parents, you know, not being from wealth or suddenly seeing this change, how did that affect your relationship with the people in your life?
Yeah, great question. So, well, with my parents, because they had all this trust in me and because I was their son, right? So I took advantage of that, and they're great people. And I always kind of managed to get away with the things that I was doing, trying to, you know, like finding like inexplicable stories around that. My relationship with the parents has been always great, but I did some terrible things. And the worst thing that I ever done to my parents is when I was 21, and I was living this rock star lifestyle. I was DJing and doing drugs and partying and whatnot. And I was just 21. I was just a kid. And one day coming, I don't know if I was coming up or what I was doing, but I was probably driving too high on something and probably too drunk as well. And I just crashed my car against the wall. And I woke up 5 days later after a coma in a hospital. And everyone thought I was going to die. And I was almost dead. So no one really finds the explanation how I pulled that one out. And it was a huge wake up call for me, because I realized on the one hand that we're living this life, and you know, I was the cause. I mean, I was doing all the wrong things. I was buying all the lottery tickets. It was a matter of time that someone was going to happen to me. But I didn't expect it, right? And one day I'm living the best life that I could imagine, and the following day I'm gone. And it could happen to me at that moment. It could happen to any one of us, because I was doing the wrong things. But, you know, like you see it happening. People wake up in the morning, go to work, they get run over by a truck, gone. And that was like, wow, if that can happen in that, you know, in such a short period of time without an announcement, or, you know, we think that the day that we're going to be gone, we're going to see it coming from the distance, and it's not like that. So that was my wake-up call. And then the other thing that I realized is that all the pain that I was doing to the people around me, because the reckless, you know, the kind of life that I was living, I wouldn't care about anything. So they would suffering the consequences of my bad decisions. And of course, family is family, and they would, you know, and in my case, I know that they will ever love me no matter what I do. And the same. And I would love them no matter the way they did. But the people around you suffers, because you cannot, if you love your family, if you love your friends, you need to love yourself first and take care of yourself, because all the people, yeah, it's selfish otherwise.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, so this is, you know, a common pattern I think I've seen across every single person that I have interviewed. If I could find one thread, this might just be it, is that some sort of major crisis in their life is often the catalyst for, you know, a massive transformation, which is not surprising because, I mean, Joseph Campbell wrote about this in The Hero's Journey. And so often I wonder, why does it take something like, you know, a near-death experience for people to have this wake-up call to realize that, wait a minute, I have this one life and I need to make it worthwhile. And, you know, they don't have this sort of tragic, you know, catalyzing event. Often they just stay comfortable. I think I've had one person who told me that they didn't have something like this happen. I think it was Gretchen Rubin, which is kind of hilarious, and she writes about happiness.
Yeah. So, well, I think we grow through, like it or not, we grow through pain. And when we have fun and things go well, that's fantastic. It's time to celebrate and enjoy. But it is the times that we are rock bottom, the times that we are going through pain. The pain will break you or will make you grow. And to me, that was a wake up call. And then I had three more experiences similar to that one, which reinforced my belief about, you know, life should be lived and enjoyed, because hopefully we're going to stay here for many years, but you never know. So I don't know, like every time that I went through a breakthrough, it's been through real pain. There's something that it makes you realize and understand. And you're right, like in the personal development industry, I know a lot of friends that are coaches, and how funny, like I know a lot of a bunch of drug dealers and people who had like nearly that experiences as well, because we, you know, it's a way to see things very clearly.
Yeah. Well, you said that, you know, it makes some people and it breaks others. Why does that happen?
Look, yeah, I see two different kinds of people, right? Like the people that give up and people that don't. I boil it down to a binary decision. And in my case, and I'm going to share my examples. In my case, like, well, if I know, there's one of my favorite authors, his name was Wayne Dyer. And he used to say, we all have a date with death. Now, knowing that we're going to be there at some point, why don't we go now? And we have this date now. So then we can just go and live our lives. And to me, I know that I will keep going and pushing and trying to live my best life, whatever that means, for as long as I'm alive. But not everyone has the same philosophy or the same attitude towards life. And some people, when they see a big adversity or something that goes really wrong, they just contract. They just contract into a lower position, if you will, and they just live on lower key because, you know, look at what happened. We must be more careful. And life, it's going to keep throwing curveballs at you. And you can just, hey, great, I've got that one. I'm still alive. I learned the lesson. I'm stronger than before. And keep moving forward because now you got better tools. Or you can get scared and say, fuck, I hope this doesn't happen again, which this one, by the way, is my mom. She's a beautiful human being. I love her to bits. But she is the kind of person that she knows that at any given moment, it could some sort of disaster could come and destroy our lives forever. So therefore, you need to be careful all the time. So, and then, yeah, I would say that it's the approach towards life that makes people make one decision or the other.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's shift gears and get into sort of where things start to go from here, because, you know, I understand that you leave corporate, you start a business. And so two things that I wonder about, one, what are the lessons from being a drug dealer that you've applied to actually this part of your life? Because I'd imagine, despite the fact that you were doing something illegal and doing something bad, there are probably useful skills that come from it that you can apply to something else. Because if you're a drug dealer, you're entrepreneurial, right? And then as an industrial engineer, I'd imagine that the way that you build things and the way that you see projects and think about things is probably very different than the person who doesn't have that background. So how did those two experiences influence you? And then, the third sort of layer to this question, actually, let's start with this third question, because I remember this was the other thing that struck me. Christine said that you basically moved to a country where you didn't speak a lick of English. So how in the world do you begin to adapt to an environment in which you no longer speak the language, and suddenly you're trying to do something wildly ambitious?
Yeah, I mean, the answer to these questions, I think it's going to come all together in one. The thing is that I had been living my life being led by circumstances, right? Like drug dealing, because it was what I had been around me. So, let's do that. My dad had this dream about me living this life, which was working in corporate, having huge responsibility, traveling for business, and dressed in a suit. And I built my dream, buying into his dream. And I thought that was going to make me happy. So I had no idea what personal development was at this stage. And I saw myself at 29, living the life of someone who wasn't me, living a dream that wasn't my dream. And at this point, I'm like, whoa, let's stop this here for a second, because all the things that I've done and all this sort of stuff, this none has made me happy. Nothing has made me happy so far. And the ultimate formula that I thought it was the happiness, it's not made me happy. It's actually making me sad. So I sat down with my parents and I said, hey, look, guys, I know I've done a lot of crazy things. And I thought that corporate was going to save me. That was going to be the making me happy. But it doesn't. And I know that you guys have done everything for me and you've been amazing. But at this stage of my life, I just need to find whatever makes me happy. And I have no idea what it is. So I'll just go ahead and find out. And I was expecting a little bit of resistance from them, because they're the two most important people of my life, right? I'm not married. I have no kids. And back then it was, And they say, son, whatever makes you happy will make us happy. I'm like, what? If I just knew that before, I would have probably done something different. So at this point, I quit everything. I quit corporate. I quit everything. And I just started. This is when my overnight success started. And it took me 10 years to build a business. And at this point, I'm like, I need to step back. I need to go somewhere so far away from my comfort zone that I can build myself from scratch, that I can design a life that it makes me happy. And I didn't speak the language, and I always wanted to learn English. So I'm like, okay, where could I go? And Australia, for a Spaniard who's never left the country, sounded like a pretty far away, exotic place to go. So I thought, yeah, why not? I would say a few words in English and say, that should be enough. So I booked a plane and I went to the other side of the world. And of course, like an engineer with a lot of experience in sales and, well, in drug dealing as well, but without the language, there's no one that's going to give you a job, right? If you can't speak, what are you going to sell? If you can't speak, what kind of engineer are you? So there I went. And I just went willing to reinvent myself, willing to do anything and everything to learn what's life about, to find the thing that makes me happy. And of course, all the lessons from my years, surrounding myself by the wrong people. One of the biggest lessons, or the biggest lessons of all, to me, was that it's very easy to hack your success if you learn who you need to surround yourself with. Because in the same way that I built a reality around me that was drugs and drug dealing, now I build realities around me that are successful people and people who are making way more money and much more bigger impact than the impact of the money that I'm making. And now that becomes my reality. And that's what I've been implementing ever since.
Mm, wow. Let's talk about this, because there's, a lot of nuances to, self-improvement and personal development. And I think that there is this tendency in the self-improvement world to look at self-help as the solution to all your problems, where a lot of people get caught up in this sort of vicious cycle of inspiration with no action. It's kind of like, oh, I read all these books, I go to all these seminars, and yet nothing changes. They just become sort of junkies. And I think that there is this sort of, instinct to confuse, activity with true accomplishment. And often people enjoy that part because it gives them the high they're seeking, but they don't really do the work that actually leads to the results. Because it's kind of like you read a book, right? And if you read the book, but you don't put any of the ideas into action, you're no better off than had you not read the book. You have this knowledge, but what the hell is the point of knowledge that you don't apply?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, how do we begin to break people of that? Because, I have had a lot of really fascinating conversations about the world of self-help, with, people who have, gotten people out of cults. We had a cult deprogramming expert here last week. We aired an episode with a guy who wrote a book called The Life-Changing Science of Detecting Bullshit. And frankly, I think he was absolutely right. There's a lot of bullshit in personal development, that makes people feel good, but doesn't change anything for them. So again, I think the thing is, look, and I'm saying this as somebody who's interviewed authors that fall into that category. I probably would, say that even my own books fall into that category. And yet a lot of people just kind of treat guidance as gospel and assume that this is the person who has the solutions to all my problems. And if I just do exactly what they say, everything will change. But you and I both know that's not true. Like, if you did exactly what I have done to build my business, and I did exactly what you did to build yours, there's no question we would get wildly different results, because our context, our background is incredibly different. So how do people take information or insight from personal development and adjust it to the context of their life? Because I think that is one of the fatal flaws in how people go about trying to use all of this information.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I would say that the first thing that people need to be willing to do is to go, take some risks. Because sitting in your couch reading a book, it's great. You get a good high, but the high, it's gone the next morning, and you go back to your normal life. Personal development and personal growth, again, growth happens through pain. And that doesn't mean that you need to fustigate yourself or, punish yourself. But what I mean is, when I went to Sydney, well, I'm telling you the good things now, right? But I was one day I was standing in front of this guy who was, I was trying to buy a ticket to jump in the metro, in the tube. I almost burst into tears, because I wasn't understanding what he was saying. The people behind me were lining up and they were complaining. I couldn't pay the freaking ticket, and I was almost about to break into tears, and that wasn't a fun moment. But I learned a lot of stuff. So what you do is you learn these things, and you need to be willing to put yourself in the position of growth. And of course, everyone has a different life, so you need to understand what it is, the moral or the outcome, or what you're trying to achieve out of the books that you read, and ask the right questions. How could I do this? How could I make this happen for me? What would that look like for me? And the answers will be different for everyone, but I think that asking the right questions, at least asking questions, because some people think that just by reading Abu, you know, getting this knowledge of going to the UPW event of Tony Robbins, which I love, by the way, but it's going to work. I mean, this is a great example. You go to a UPW and it's the event from Tony Robbins. You spend a whole weekend, you get out of this like pumped up, like you get in a really big high, and they give you a bunch of tools and strategies and techniques and rituals that you can implement every single day of your life. So you can keep the momentum and this motivation and everything, you know, and this motivation keeps being up. But what happens is that most people fall back into the default mode, right? They go to work, they wake up in the morning, they just do the same thing over and over again, and the same thing keeps happening to their lives. So, yeah, there must be, I think the people that change, they always change because there's something so painful at some point that they makes them realize that, okay, well, the information that I have, what do I do to change things for once and forever? So I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. It's a hard one to respond, but be willing to put yourself into the situation of out of your comfort zone, or wait until something painful enough happens so you finally do it.
I tend to joke, you know, that I often have with my guests is I ask questions that have no answers.
That was a tricky one. I was sweating. But it's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the real purpose behind questions like that is that I think people want a map, and it just makes me realize, like, the only place you're going to end up with on somebody else's map is where they've ended up, and that's if you're lucky. And so that's, you know, something that I think is incredibly important that is often overlooked in this process. So, you know, let's talk briefly about mindset around money. Because, you know, from what Christine told me, you organically, you know, grew this into a $1 million business, which, you know, I think any one of us who is listening to this would be like, wow, you did all of this organically. Like, why did that happen when, you know, people are literally every day looking for like the latest marketing hack, the, you know, hey, what strategy now to get, you know, more people to my website? Like, you know, it's amazing how much time people spend on ancillary activities and how much they ignore foundational work. What are the foundations that enable, you know, the building of a $1 million business? And how much of that is mindset and how much of it is strategy?
Yeah, good question. I would say that I got lucky. And again, that was my overnight success. It took me 10 years of personal research and personal development. And I think that some people get the formula wrong, right? Like we all inspired, that we all motivated by the money and the success and the freedom that comes with it. And then what we do is to find the strategies or the techniques that are going to get us the money. And we forget about finding what it is that it motivates us, what it is that's going to make you happy, that's going to make you feel fulfilled moving forward, and a solid foundation of your business, which basically is making other people's lives better. And for me, it was, you know, like a lot of research, a lot of hard work and not giving up and knowing that no matter what was going to happen, I was going to find out the way to make this thing happen. And this conviction and this certainty, it is definitely one of the keys of my success and from anyone else. Because for all the time that I've been in business, I see so many people starting up and giving up, starting out, giving up. But like, dude, you need to try a little bit more. If you really want something, you need to find a big why that's going to set some good fire under your ass and wake you up in the morning. Because I was working 60 hours a week in corporate and I was building my side hustle on the side. And I would wake up at 5 a.m. I would just go and post on organically, post on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever. Go to work, find a minute to post it again, like keep creating this audience, keep adding value. And it was crazy. And I don't know many people that can do that consistently for 1-2 years. Mm-hmm. And consistency, hard work, and building an audience, I would say it's probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
And from there, like, look, I found the right mentors, I found the right coaches, and you know, some people think, and I was one of those for 2 years, that I could do everything myself, that I didn't need any help because I knew better than anyone. And for 2 years, I tried to reinvent the wheel. And when I finally this guy gives me the formula for the wheel, I'm like, oh, fuck. So that was already invented. Yeah. Like, so I felt like a little bit like an idiot because I thought, well, no one else has an online business. I'm going to build one. And they're like, okay, you know, like this cold sweat, like, cool. So I could have asked before for help. Just, you know, find someone who's got a business like the one you would try to build and copy. Yeah. And there's once something that Pablo Picasso said once, and he said, the good artist copy and great artist steal. And he was like, he's one of the best artists from all times. But the thing is that some people try to reinvent the wheel, they want to be authentic and genuine, you know, like there's nothing wrong with that. But hey, dude, there's something that's working already in the market. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with going and emulate it. Try to copy it. Try to make it work for you. And then you can improve it and become really authentic and genuine. And that worked really well for me.
Well, I think there's a nuance that, you know, people will overlook when they say try to copy it and make it work for you. Because what they'll overlook, you know, Ron Friedman recently wrote this fantastic book called Decoding Greatness. And we, you know, had him as a guest here. And, you know, it was all about the process of reverse engineering. And he said that the subtle nuance of that is, yes, take other people's ideas, but apply them in new contexts, because that's how they become more effective. That is often what ends up happening, is that people will, you know, in my mind, they see something that works, they try to copy it exactly to the letter. Like, I saw this happen. Derek Halperin launched his blog. I remember talking to a blogger who literally copied, you know, Derek's website design to the letter, and was surprised he wasn't getting the same results. And I'm thinking, dude, I'm like, Derek has like 10 years of experience building websites that you don't. No wonder you're not getting the same results. Like, it's not, that's, and they often, I think, miss the point when it comes to these kinds of things.
Yeah, totally. That's a great point. And I heard something. Yeah, who was talking about that? Patrick Jean. I can't remember the name exactly, but the name of the book is called Your Stand is Your Brand. And he's talking, Patrick Jean Tempo, I think is the name. I forgot. I read the book twice. It's a great book. So he was saying, like, you can copy someone, but when you copy what you see, and you can get some results, but you don't know the logic behind it. You don't know all the mechanisms and all the reason and all the work that's been behind to create this thing that now it's super successful. It's the tip of the iceberg, right? So you copy it and you don't see the same results. So this is why, you know, you want to find someone who you can model. And this is when the power of proximity and having the right mentor and the right coaches is going to play a fundamental role. Because if you share big information and you try to copy something that's expecting similar results, it's not going to work. But if you find the right strategy, you model it, you implement it, and then you add your twist, your own flavor to it, once you've mastered the skill, then the results are going to be completely different.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, you've talked about this idea that, you know, sort of everybody is chasing sort of the money, the freedom, you know, without examining their underlying motivations, which I really appreciate, because I think, you know, Ryder Carroll probably had one of the best explanations I'd ever heard of this. He said, you know, often you set these very arbitrary goals, like, hey, $1 million. He said, but how do you know that's going to make you happy? And what do you think it will give you? Right. Yeah. And the funny thing is, though, every single time I have this conversation with somebody, right? I was just listening to our interview that we had, you know, on Friday with the director of innovation at Google, who sold, you know, several startups, and I talked about money. He said, the big thing that comes from it is you teach yourself that you can do this, and you come to that realization that it doesn't make you as happy as you thought it would be, that you would, but it's almost always a person who's already made it that money that is saying that. So for the person who hasn't, they're just like, yeah, that sounds great, but I need to see this for myself. Because how does somebody wrap their head around that if they, you know, like, haven't had $1 million?
Good question. I think, to me, one of the things that played the biggest roles, one of the biggest keys of my success, and everyone else around me that's successful, and I always pay a lot of attention. And maybe because of my engineer mind, I get to pick up buttons really quick. It is the beliefs. And someone who's never had $1 million, I mean, you really want to understand and feel and see how it is like having that. And one of the things that I teach my clients is like, hey, it's not about what you want to do. It's not about what you need to do to get the success that you want, but who do you need to become? And if you want to build a seven-figure business and if you want to be a seven-figure CEO, well, you need to learn not only what they do, but who they are, how they live their lives, how they treat people, how they, you know, what kind of people are they? What kind of leadership skills? What kind of attitude toward life do they have? And that sounds too woo-woo for the ones who are not ready, but I always say the same thing. Some people, I always said, oh, rich people are very happy because they're rich. And then I realized, oh no, like rich people are rich because they're happy. So you create the person first and then the results will show. Whereas some people fight for their entire lives to get the results, being angry, being frustrated, and this doesn't, you know, get them anywhere. So spend time learning about who do you need to be to generate the result. And how are you going to be when you have the result? Because you can start being this person today and generate the result right now.
No, I mean, it's funny you say that because like I wrote this article titled Why, you know, changing behavior leads to better results than setting goals, because changing your behavior causes you to become the type of person who can accomplish that goal. And that's something, you know, I got this, you know, dream come true of writing a book with a publisher. And I said, you know what? I'm probably not going to write another book with a publisher, maybe in this lifetime. And I'll tell you, the biggest benefit that came from it was not seeing my name on a book or, you know, on a bookshelf. It was that I became the type of person who could take a very ambiguous idea, spend a year working on it, and turn it into a reality.
Mm.
And that I realized would serve me well for the rest of my life.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. But, you know, not everyone is willing to do that.
Yeah. Wow. So two final questions for you. You know, as you've become older and, you know, you've accumulated more money and you've become more successful, how has your personal definition of success changed with age?
Hmm. You know what? It was funny. Last week, someone asked me, are you successful? And I was like, fuck, I didn't know what to answer at this moment, because I'm like, I don't think, I had to have like an honest moment with myself, and I say it out loud. I say, I don't think I'm never going to consider myself successful, because there's always a next level of success that we want to achieve. And because we're not there, sometimes it takes an effort to appreciate where you are today and understand that you're successful, so you can reach the next level of success. But it changes all the time. And I think one of the common traits of entrepreneurs is that we always want more. Not in a greedy way, but in a way that, okay, what's next? If I got that far, where else could I go? How farther away could I get? And this is what makes us grow. And you need to be really careful, because it could make you very unhappy as well, because it could generate not to be happy with who you are today. So to me, the definition of success is being genuinely happy and grateful for where you are today, and knowing that you can get as far as you want as long as you're willing and to put in the work.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I have one last question, which is how we finish all of our interviews on The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Sorry?
What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Unmistakable. Being humble. Being humble. Honest. Being humble and honest. You can never go wrong with that. You can never be mistaken. And we always, like, the only way to not to make mistakes is to do nothing. And that's also the quickest way to die. So if you move, if you take action on new things, you will make mistakes. But if you're humble enough to acknowledge them, to be sorry for them if you have to, learn the lesson and move on, it can never go wrong. So you'll always be unmistakable.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story, your wisdom and insights with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything that you're up to?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the best place they can find me. It's probably the safest. LinkedIn or Instagram, but I like LinkedIn better because Facebook doesn't shut my account down every second month. So yeah, LinkedIn. Carlos, I'll send you the link.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.